Hello and welcome to this episode of Viewpoints. On this week's show, a local eatery's Friday favorite, fish and chips, will soon be featured in an international cookbook.
What's the most popular pub food? It's fish and chips. You know, we're notorious for it. Certainly, the place is full every Friday for Fish Friday, and it might be the most popular item on our menu.
Winnipeg's new green spaces plan puts Indigenous knowledge at the forefront. The new policy aims to conserve and expand green spaces by 1,000 acres.
So by moving forward with co-development, the city is supporting its environmental goals while also strengthening a commitment to reconciliation.
Canadian actor Ryan Reynolds hopes that the Ontario Cobourg Council Committee will rename the Pond Arena in honor of Grace Bowen, a child who lost her life to cancer 10 years ago.
As long as I live, if I have a free moment for any kid who's carrying a bag of rocks around like that, I will make time for them.
A recently launched a publishing press in New Westminster wants to do things differently.
We've got incredible response from veterans, from Indigenous writers, from LGBTQ authors, from doctors, farmers, people who do all sorts of jobs across this country. And these are the essays that are just starting to come in now.
And the city of Kitchener, Ontario is named as Tree City of the World. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello to you all. Nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Chassai, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Today, we'll stop in Burnaby, BC, Kitchener and Cobourg, Ontario, and Winnipeg, Manitoba. The city of Kitchener has been named a Tree City of the World by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and the Arbor Day Foundation. 21 cities in Canada and 210 cities in 24 countries have also been named with the same title. As we look forward to celebrating Earth Day later this month, the designation reflects Kitchener's efforts in tree care policy development and maintaining a healthy urban canopy. The cities of Hamilton and Cambridge also hold the leafy designation. In a press release announcing the designation, Kitchener Mayor Barry Varbanovich said this recognition is a wonderful indicator that we're moving in the right direction for our community, our forest, and our planet. Dan Keller spoke with Joshua Shea, Manager of Forestry and Natural Area Management at the City of Kitchener.
To achieve the Tree City of the World designation, a city must establish responsibility for trees with dedicated staff, set rules through bylaws and policies, and follow those rules through practices and targets. Know what trees you have through tree inventories and guiding documents, such as Kitchener's Sustainable Urban Forest Strategy. Allocate the resources for the plans to be met through annual budgets, corporate leadership, and council support. And to celebrate achievements through educational efforts, engagement, and public acknowledgments of the work being done. The designation is annual, so the city will have to apply yearly to maintain their status. However, there is no cost to the city to apply for the designation. What is the Tree City of the World recognition, and how did Kitchener get nominated for it?
Yeah, this is an international recognition for cities across the world that take care of trees or promote trees or have a forestry program as part of their municipal work. So the city had applied to this designation. It meets the five core criteria to become a Tree City of the World. So in 2024, we were designated as an official Tree City of the World.
So is this like a goal, something your department was looking to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, these kind of opportunities are a great way to promote the work that we do here at the City of Kitchener, to be able to, you know, showcase and demonstrate how the work that we do is comparable amongst cities across the world. So, you know, it's always something we're looking for, an opportunity to be, you know, showcase and highlight and demonstrate that, you know, we're doing really good stuff here at the City of Kitchener. And, you know, we want people to be aware of that.
What does this recognition mean for the city? How will the award influence the city's, like, environmental strategy?
We already have a really strong environmental strategy and urban forest strategy that guides our work. So, you know, we have a lot of the background work in place to help guide us forward. So if anything, it'll strengthen that work and it'll help us move forward, you know, in the work that we're doing and help us, you know, get buy-in from the community or work with the community to advance these goals and work with our own internal stakeholders as well as council, you know, to try and advance the work of urban forestry. So it helps just kind of raise that bar a little bit.
Now, the other day, city councilors were gushing over the recognition and your department. Are you proud of the work that reflects the designation of a tree city of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. We're extremely proud of it, and me personally as well, being a part of the team that leads this work. You know, it wouldn't be possible without our team and the work that we do. So it's really nice to receive that recognition. We know we have great council support, and they're always behind us on these efforts. So it's, you know, it's a good opportunity to celebrate collaboratively in the work that we're all doing to advance this, you know, between our team and council and the community. So it really speaks to a lot of that. And you know, it's nice to be able to receive the recognition, but it's also a good way for us to continue to work collaboratively together in the future.
Now, in partial celebration of this, there is a tree giveaway on May 3rd. How do people get a tree for that? And what kind of trees are offered? And any fruit trees?
In order to qualify or for people to be able to access and request a tree, they just have to go online, kitchener.ca/trees, and fill out the online form to request a tree. We ask them to fill out a little bit of information about the space they have to plant that tree so we can help maybe choose a species that makes best sense or will grow in the right space for their yard. So they're not choosing a large tree if they don't have the space, or for example. So there's a variety of different species they can choose from. You know, our target was 210 free trees to be able to give away. So we're monitoring that interest, and we're keeping track of the number of trees and going to order those species. And then on Saturday, May 3rd, we're looking at about 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. So the morning slot to have people drop by, pick up those trees. So there's a variety of different species. I don't know if there's fruit trees at this point. We're looking at canopy trees or other species. But, you know, as interest grows in these programs, we're looking at ways to expand it going forward in the future as well.
What tree species do you appreciate most in the city?
We always have that conversation amongst our team members as to what trees we like and why. Me personally, I like, there's a smaller stature tree called the redbud tree. We don't see it growing too frequently in the city, but it is a popular tree. It just flowers really nicely in the spring. It's great for pollinators. The flowering attracts lots of different pollinators, so I like it for that aspect.
The other really pressing question, of course, everyone's wondering is, do you have a favorite single tree in town, one that maybe you climb or pick fruit from?
I can't say I have a specific tree, but, you know, I do find myself as I move through the city or I go to various places, I do notice trees and how they're changing throughout the seasons. You know, you see the same tree on the same corner each day and you get to notice and appreciate it and admire it. So I wouldn't say I have a specific tree that I gravitate towards, but I do, you know, I do notice the tree canopy and I value its benefits and you know, I appreciate having that as part of my community.
That was an interview with Joshua Shea, the Manager of Forestry and Natural Area Management at the City of Kitchener. Visit kitchener.ca/trees for more information about the Tree City of the World designation. This is Dan Keller. Thank you for tuning in.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
A new policy bylaw adopted by the City of Winnipeg could change the city's future as it aims to conserve and expand the city's green spaces by 1,000 acres. The city is developing its Green Space and Natural Corridors Plan bylaw, as well as a biodiversity policy. The upcoming Green Spaces Plan will be the city's first initiative to protect and expand interconnected natural corridors, such as rivers, creeks, and treed streets that support the movement of people, wildlife, and plant species. Here's Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
A new policy and bylaw by the City of Winnipeg opens the door to new opportunities and could change the city's future. The city is developing a Green Space and Natural Corridors Plan bylaw, the Green Spaces Plan, and a biodiversity policy with First Nations, Métis, and Inuit governments and organizations. Shauna Prosiak, a project manager with the City of Winnipeg and co-developer on the Green Spaces Plan, says this effort to integrate Indigenous perspectives and voices into municipal policymaking processes is a vital step in the journey of reconciliation.
We want to ensure that we reflect the interests and values of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples who live here in Winnipeg. And the work that happens in Winnipeg does affect areas beyond our borders. So by moving forward with co-development, the city is supporting its environmental goals while also strengthening a commitment to reconciliation.
Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs Grand Chief Kira Wilson says the efforts of the city to collaborate with First Nations leadership is a positive for all communities in preserving natural areas.
When we talk about spaces within the city of Winnipeg, you know, we need to be able to protect and conserve as many green spaces as we can. That speaks to the, you know, recreational needs of our children and our families, but also the spiritual and cultural practices of not only Indigenous people, but for all people. And so when we think about green spaces, you know, it's also speaking to climate change and climate adaptation, and what does that mean for us as, you know, residents within the city of Winnipeg.
The Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs is one of several Indigenous organizations co-developing this policy. The upcoming Green Spaces Plan will be the city's first initiative to protect and expand interconnected natural corridors such as rivers, creeks, and treed streets that support the movement of people, wildlife, and plant species. Grand Chief Wilson says a key aspect of this development is how the principles of two-eyed seeing guide it.
Indigenous or First Nations people, the knowledge that we carry, it comes from our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our ancestors. And so when you think about, all of these different areas that, you know, we need to see Indigenous knowledge incorporated, biodiversity, green spaces, all of that, we need to make sure that we are including the Indigenous knowledge perspective when we are talking about strengths between, you know, Western ways of knowing or Indigenous knowledge and practices.
The project stems from directions in the city's long-term planning documents, including Our Winnipeg 2045 and the Complete Community Strategy. Prozieck says the new policy will aim to conserve and expand green spaces by 1,000 acres, create a bylaw for managing natural corridors, and promote biodiversity.
And a lot of it came out of community input and public engagement about the priorities and importance of natural areas and green spaces to the city. And also how part of it is how we need to create a plan to determine how we protect our green spaces as we're developing our city moving forward.
The next step, phase one of the plan, will involve public and stakeholder engagement through a survey, inviting Winnipeggers to share their thoughts on green spaces and natural areas. Input gathered from the community will be reviewed and used in collaboration with co-developers to create a strategic plan outlining targets, actions, and implementation. The survey is open until April 15th. While the original goal was to present the final policy in 2026, it is now expected to go before the City Council in early 2027 due to the upcoming election year. I'm Ryan Funk.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints.
So Sharon Hughes has been serving up fish and chips every Friday for nearly two decades at the historic Dominion Hotel in Minden, Ontario. But little did she know that her recipe would one day be included in an international cookbook. Now the Friday fan favorite will be included in a cookbook with hundreds of others from hospitality hotspots around the world. Entitled Inspired Stays Local Flavors, the cookbook is the brainchild of Envivo, a cloud-based accommodation booking and management platform, and the Dominion Hotel, in operation since before Confederation, has used the platform. Journalist Elizabeth Oakley in Haliburton, Ontario, spoke with Sean Chamberlain, the owner of the Dominion Hotel. He and his wife were really surprised to be honored with the award.
Every Friday, the Dominion Hotel in Minden serves up its beloved fish and chips to customers. The dish has been on the menu almost as long as the hotel itself, and now it's made its way into a worldwide cookbook. Entitled Inspired Stays Local Flavors, the cookbook is the brainchild of Invivo, a cloud-based accommodation booking and management platform. The Dominion Hotel, which uses the platform, has been recognized for its delicious food and outstanding user experience. KNU FM recently spoke with Sean Chamberlain, owner of the Dominion Hotel. He and his wife were surprised to be honored with the award and included in a cookbook that features other world-class establishments.
We put an application in just for fun, not thinking that, you know, who cares about Minden and, you know, who cares about a little old 100-plus-year-old hotel. And they liked it. Our recipes are very simple, and we've always strived to be very, very simple, comfort food, you know, good tasting, big servings, but simple. And they like the feel, the vibe of that. So they gave us a spot. And we're really honored. I mean, these are people that book, you know, thousands and thousands of reservations, hotel rooms and whatnot a day. It's pretty big time. And the company comes out of Europe, but they've got offices all over the world. And so this is going to be distributed throughout all their offices. So it'll bring some international attention to our little town and our little hotel.
Chamberlain says picking which dish to include in the cookbook was a no-brainer. The Dominion Hotel's fish and chips served up each Fish Friday was the clear choice.
It wasn't very complicated. I mean, we're a pub. What's the most popular pub food? It was fish and chips. You know, we're notorious for it. Certainly, the place is full every Friday for Fish Friday, and it might be the most popular item on our menu. So we sell a ton of it, and we know that it's good, and the recipe's been the same for a couple of decades. And why not go with it? And part of the book isn't just food. It's also about exceptional experiences. So it's all about, I mean, that's the thing everybody's into these days. They want an experience. They don't just want to go someplace and take a picture and then go home. They want to have felt something when they're there. And we always thought that, you know, the fish and chips, and it's made with our own beer, our 1865 lager. It's a beer battered fish and chips. So we use that in it. So it tells our story. Our first formal recollection of the hotel was from 1865. We know the hotel opened a few years before that, but that predates Canada. So when you talk about an institution, you know, we're 2 years older than Canada as a country. We're one of the oldest operating hotels in Canada, here in downtown Minden.
Besides delicious pub grub, the Dominion Hotel has six suites it rents. Originally, the hotel had 14 rooms with a shared bathroom. But Chamberlain and his wife renovated the rooms to include all the comforts of home. Besides those changes, the approach to welcoming guests and diners hasn't changed much in the last century.
You know, the Dominion's been around since 1865. That's a long, long time, and who am I to mess with a formula that works?
The Dominion Hotel is also a live spot for entertainment in Minden. The cookbook, Inspired Stays Local Flavors, is already available for sale on Amazon.
Tuned to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
An arena in the city of Cobourg, Ontario, will be renamed after a Grafton child who died of cancer. Grace Bowen died of a rare form of bone cancer in March 2015. Canadian actor Ryan Reynolds became good friends with Grace and her family. He was present at the Cobourg Council Committee meeting last Wednesday, advocating for the arena name change. Grace was an avid hockey player and enthusiast, having spent considerable time at the Pond Arena at the Cobourg Community Center. The suggestion to rename the arena after Grace came following a celebration in Cobourg for the Hospital for Sick Children's 150th anniversary earlier this month. Ian Jones.
The Pond Arena at the Cobourg Community Center will soon be named after Grace Bowen. Grace, a Grafton girl, an avid hockey player and fan, died in March 2015 after a battle with osteosarcoma. Grace's warmth and charm led her to meeting actor Ryan Reynolds and hockey star Hayley Wickenheiser at a Canada's Walk of Fame ceremony in Toronto. Reynolds was in attendance Wednesday at a Coburg Council committee meeting in favor of renaming the Pond Arena. He recalled when he met Grace backstage at the awards ceremony, saying that moment changed his life.
Just from the moment I met her that night, I said, I'm never, as long as I live, if I have a free moment for any kid who's carrying a bag of rocks around like that, or their parents, I will make time for them. I don't care where or how or when. I spend a half a day each week just doing videos for kids.
The Hospital for Sick Children's 150th anniversary honored Grace with a balloon display at the Grand Center of the Coburg Community Center earlier this month. She would spend many months as a patient at Sick Kids to receive treatment for the rare and aggressive form of cancer. Reynolds relayed that he had a conversation with Grace's father, Greg, following the balloon ceremony last weekend about renaming the pond in Grace's honor.
It sounds like it would be pretty beautiful if we were able to rename the arena, the Grace Bowen Arena, or the Grace Bowen Memorial Arena. I think just Grace Bowen Arena.
Coburg Mayor Lucas Cleveland presented a motion to direct town staff to begin the renaming process. That motion passed unanimously. A timeline on the renaming ceremony has not been given, but Reynolds stated he would attend the ceremony if available. Reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrim, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
To New Westminster, British Columbia now, where the Groove Cats Books and Records, a community used book and record shop owned by husband and wife team John and Kathy Hughes, recently launched the Cosmic Cranium Press. It's an independent publishing press that John Hughes has already used to launch his book, Dream Punk, A Nightscape. Danny Nesvadrani in Burnaby, British Columbia, visited the couple's store, where he spoke with John Hughes to find out more about Cosmic Cranium Press and Hughes's future publishing goals and plans for future titles. He also gave advice to others wanting to make an impact on the independent publishing industry.
Operated and owned by husband and wife duo John and Kathy Hughes, this bookstore has a bi-weekly book club, author talks, and musical sessions by local artists. One of GrooveCat's stated goals is to foster community connection through stories and music. Their next venture to achieve this? Their very own publishing company. To find out more about Cosmic Cranium, CJSF took a trip down to GrooveCat Books and Records, where we immediately found ourselves surrounded by used books, pieces of art, records, and the sounds of light jazz playing on vinyl. When we finally sat down with John Hughes, we asked him to provide an explanation for why Cosmic Cranium Publishing was launched in the first place.
So I was a sessional instructor for a couple of different post-secondary institutions, and I one morning woke up and was cursing at my computer at about 5:30 in the morning, and my wife said to me, "Is this really what you want to do with 15 years in university?" And I responded that no it wasn't, and her suggestion was, well, let's do something a little more rewarding. So we picked a bookstore, and that went over pretty well in the community. So Groove Cat Books and Records, part of what we aim to do is make things groovier. If you've seen this town, there's not enough soul or groove going on here. There's a lot of concrete, steel condos, high-end dentist offices, and here's sort of upscale gyms in the ground floor, and very little in the way of cultural representation. So we wanted to make things at least stick our noses in the area where we thought we could sort of contribute culturally. That's how Groove Cat Books and Records was born. I had a book that I've been working on since my days at SFU in the School of Communication there, which had to do with my research on dreams, and it... I had a bunch of almosts in publication. One guy actually suggested that he would pick it up, a guy in Columbus, Ohio, but also wanted me to pay for half of the publication costs. So I thought, okay, you know what? We've got Groove Cat Books and Records. Why not start a publication company? And hence, Cosmic Cranium Press was born.
We also asked Hughes if there were any other books in the works that Cosmic Cranium plans on publishing. Here's what he had to say to that.
Canada is not the 51st effing state. And it is going to be a collection of essays by everyday Canadians on not only that, the fact remains Canada will never be the 51st state, but the reasons why people see it this way from personal perspective. And I've reached out in a lot of different directions, and we've got incredible response from veterans, from Indigenous writers, from LGBTQ authors, from doctors, farmers, people who do all sorts of jobs across this country. And these are the essays that are just starting to come in now. The deadline's still open, so if people are interested, hit us up at CosmicCraniumPress.com and look for submissions. And, you know, I mean, if you've got a great idea and the deadline's a little short, we can probably work with you on that. But it's definitely a counterpunch to Donald Trump's ridiculous idea of the 51st state. So we've seen the political response. This is a cultural counterpunch, shall we say.
Afterwards, we asked him to expand on some of the other types of books that he hopes Cosmic Cranium is able to publish.
So that's kind of the spirit of what we do at Cosmic Cranium Press. If there's a problem we don't know about yet, and we should be aware of, and there's ways that people can tackle it head on as individuals or as a community without deference to elites or really anybody who proclaims himself to be, you know, an expert in the field and isn't willing to work with people, then that's something that we would definitely look at. Also, stuff that is, you know, if there's a cultural or political horizon that is about to erupt, then people can research and write about that in a credible fashion. When I say credible, don't get your sources from internet conspiracy stuff. We're not interested at all. Research, you know, on the ground, talking to people, backed up by scholarly research at the same time. This is the kind of stuff that we're looking for. Or if your book just is a real out of left field complete dazzler that, you know, the writing is just so sparkling that we can't say no to, these are the kind of books that we're also interested in.
At the end of the interview, John Hughes left us with some advice that he has for anyone interested in owning their own bookstore or publishing company.
If you open a used bookstore, get a cat. We just lost ours, which is very sad. We will at some point get another, but it's a little raw right now. But get a cat in your bookstore. Very, very key. Connect with your community. Listen to people. Have local authors come in. Have local artists come in. Invite musicians, poets, anybody who wants to be part of the community. When people come in who are interested to hang out and look around, don't worry if they don't buy a book that day or really ever. It's about community. Okay, it's nice to keep the lights on. So if you can afford to buy a book, please do. If you can't, don't sweat it. From the publishing side of things, play your hunches. Go with your heart, but be smart about it and work your connections. That's really all I have to say about that.
Once again, you were just listening to our conversation with John Hughes, one of the owners of Groovecat Books and Records, as well as Cosmic Cranium Press in New Westminster, BC. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist. Find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
That's all for us at Viewpoints. A big thank you to our journalists this week, Ryan Funk, Ian Jones, Elizabeth Oakley, Danny Nesvedarani, and Dan Keller. Remember to get all our stories on frequencynews.ca. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.
questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Radio@frequencynews.ca.